budget approval meeting to order. I guess we'll start with some recognitions here before we go on. We're going to wait to talk a little later. And President Boney.
Richard Johnson, thanks so much. Good morning. I just want to make a couple of introductions before we get started in earnest today. We have a couple of new cabinet members who are joining us here for their first Regents meeting in those roles. The first person I'd like to introduce is Amanda Tribu.
There she is.
Amanda is a two-time WKU alumna and started her career with us here at WKU in 2002 as an alumni coordinator, became a director of development for the Gordon Ford College of Business, and left us in 2008 for a bit of a professional sojourn. She spent some time at Washington University in St. Louis as their director of regional development, and then for a decade at Vanderbilt, first as director of development at Peabody College. Amanda and I overlapped for about a year, year and a half there at Peabody, and then most recently as Vanderbilt Peabody's associate dean. She joins us and brings a wealth of experience in fundraising to our new vice president for philanthropy and alumni engagement. So, Amanda, welcome. It's good to have you. The second is our new executive vice president for strategy, operations, and finance, Susan Howard, who's here with us this morning. Susan has had a 30-year career at that school up the road that wears the wrong color red, starting in 1989 at the University of Louisville as a policy and budget analyst. She has had a long career and grown not just as a policy analyst but as a strategist in the university, serving both as director and associate VP of the Office of Budget Planning and as vice president and chief budget officer for the provost, or vice provost and chief budget officer, and lastly, and most recently, serving as interim CFO for the University of Louisville. So, Susan and Amanda both started with us on Monday. They're fully prepared, ready to answer any of your questions you might have. Regent Johnson, thank you.
Good. Well, we had one other pre-meeting agenda item, and student regent's not here, so we'll just move forward. Aiden, could you please call the roll?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Regent. Chair Bale. Regent Ball, she's been able to join us yet.
She's on.
She's on. Regent Ball, come back again. Regent Brinkley,
present.
Regent Ernst,
present.
Regent Higdon, present. Regent Henson,
present.
Vice Chair Johnson,
present.
Regent Mayer, Regent McKinney,
present.
Regent Nichols,
present.
Regent Porter,
present.
Regent Ball, well, we definitely have a quorum present, Mr. Chair, and we'll.
All right, you
know. No, as soon as Regent Ball joins us.
All right, that's fine. Or the student Regent joins us, then we can go from there. Pursuant to the notice, this is the special budget approval meeting. It is not a consent item, so it will be open for discussion. What I'd like to do, and I pre-approved this with Dr. Capps, I'd like to entertain a motion, and then that would be certainly hopefully followed by a second, and then allow or President Boney and or President Boney to make whatever comments they wish to make their presentation, et cetera. As that we hold our questions and our comments until such time as they've had an opportunity to address and inform us regarding the budget. A lot of the information has been provided to you. We have previously approved the tuition increase in March. So without any objection, I will entertain a motion for approval of the 2019-2020 operating budget.
So moved.
I have a motion by Regent Higdon. Do I have a second?
Second.
Ooh, we got a whole bunch of seconds. So, Regent Ford. Ann?
Thank you. This is my 23rd budget.
But who's counting? So my first budget was $130 million. So a lot has changed. We're a very complex organization. I think like having a budget three times larger than when I started. But was anybody here for my first budget? Porter? Mr. Porter and I go way back. So let me say that what you have in budget, it doesn't matter if it was my first one or 23rd one, the same elements are true. And those things don't change. This is the financial plan for the university for the next 12 months. Budget summary. We're asking you to approve a budget of $387,762,000. It remains basically unchanged, small change from the current fiscal year 19. The unrestricted educational and general part of the budget is 78% of the total funds. The restricted E&G budget is comprised of your student financial aid, state and federal funds, and about 30% of that total is from grants and contracts. Revenue highlights. The foundation of our budget has been and continues to be tuition and fees. While we're budgeting $10.5 million less in tuition and fees compared to the current year, which is about a 5% reduction, it's still obviously 48% of our budget and very significant to the foundation of the university's operating budget. When you combine state appropriation and tuition and fees together, we are at two-thirds of our operating budget. We are dependent on the student and we're dependent on the state. That's why in the past we have called it public funds. It is the heart of how we operate. On the top of the pyramid, we'll cover this in a little more detail in another slide, is the use of carry forward or one-time funds to balance the budget. And again, that's a different slide that I will cover. This number is up $10 million from the FY19 budget, but I can tell you that we generated $27 million in carry forward in fiscal, that we brought forward from fiscal year 18 into fiscal year 19, and this target should be easily achieved. State appropriation. We're on a biennial budget. You'll see a decline in state funding for the general operating. What this is a 1% movement into a performance funding pool. So when the enacted budget was passed, every institution had a 1% assessment, and it was moved into a competitive pool allocated by the CPE. We have been informed of our allocation from the performance pool, and we earned $624,500 in comparison to $690,600 that we put into the pool, for a difference overall in our state funding of $60,100. Expenditure highlights. Our budget is based on personnel, always has been, always will be. The heart of the institution is the personnel budget that provides all of the instruction, research, and service. The personnel budget is approximately 57% of our resources and pays for salaries, fringe benefits, our part-time faculty, and our student wages. At 57%, you know in the past, it makes it very hard to make some reduction decisions because it impacts the employment base. But some of the other parts of the triangle, the pyramid, are very, very important to our operations. And I highlight that the student aid portion is 17% of our budget and remains a priority that we can meet the needs of students, especially those that come in with the financial challenge and sometimes a small gap necessary to be able to be successful and remain at WKU. So that 17% or $51 million in student aid is a very important element of this budget. The unrestricted budget organizationally, the provost oversees approximately half of all of the unrestricted educational and general resources at $150.6 million. The university-wide seems like a rather daunting number being so large. That's where we put organizationally the institutional scholarships, the bad debt, some staff benefits undistributed, a strategic investment fund, which I'll talk about in a minute, and some contingencies. The budget is built on what you approved, which was the 2% increase for undergraduate students. What we have done is aligned the $1.6 million with the tuition increase and have recommended funding for a series of fixed or unavoidable costs. Faculty promotions, as you normally see at this time of year. Student accommodations necessary for especially the hearing impaired. Contractual obligations to maintain our facilities and maintain our infrastructure related to IT. The last item is employer-funded health insurance. It fully funds the increase that went into effect January 2019 and allocates a small amount for a projected increase in January of 2020 for a total of $1,600,000. As always, balancing a budget can be a challenge, and while there's a lot of numbers on this slide, I'll try to simplify it. As we developed RAMP and a new budget model, we are transitioning to a concept called net tuition. What you have seen in the past is gross tuition with no adjustments for scholarships or bad debt. This presents a net tuition depiction of balancing the budget that takes the gross tuition and adjust it by any changes that we have made or proposing to make in our funding for scholarships and our bad debt. You normally don't hear much about bad debt, and that's because we have been historically funding it with one-time funds. But a more appropriate way, financial way with this new model is to recognize it as an adjustment to the amount that you truly have to spend. So what we have to get to the net tuition is an approximate amount of $1.2 million to fully fund the bad debt, the uncollectibles on student accounts, and $3.2 million that we're putting into enhancing our scholarship program. I've addressed the $60,000 and the change in the state appropriation. The change in mandatory student fees is for athletics, and the fee that you approved for the Creason garage debt, and it reflects only the change that we're projecting in enrollment starting next fall. I believe we covered reduction targets in your budget briefing at the last meeting. So these reduction targets actually represent 3% of the unrestricted budget. The last item is an adjusting entry that we made for the debt related to the mandatory student fees. And I meant to introduce Stacy Garrett when I first started. Stacy is our budget director, and she'll answer questions that I can't answer. But I'm about ready to use one of the phrases that she knows I use in budget. Everybody got to be somewhere. So she picked that up over the last 10 years. And that's why we have an adjustment for the mandatory student fees, so that my budget balancing at the bottom of $16,460,000 aligns with the $16,460,000 reduction on top of the spreadsheet. Carry forward. This budget includes the allocation of $13.2 million of carry forward. There are two components of this. The FY19 budget had $3,665,000 allocated to balance the budget and to fund some key initiatives related to facilities and IT infrastructure. We're continuing those forward, and we're increasing the carry forward budget by $9,555,000. $1.9 million will fully fund the Strategic Investment Fund. The $7.6 million is being used for operating and for reducing the budget reduction targets that we had initially set for the support and allocation committees. This number is probably a low budget estimate. I have looked at May revenue and receipts, and don't hold me to it. I won't be here when you say me, Mr. Target. But I think the target could be in the $24 to $28 million, just looking at only with 1 month to go. So what happens is that we will finalize the carry forward, and we will come back to the board with a request for additional expenditure authority for any amount that exceeds the $13.2 million. The reduction targets we've talked about. For the colleges, $3.4 million. And these amounts were determined by the provost and the deans based on performance metrics and a prorated amount based on their size and budget. The reduction targets ranged from 2.5% to about 5.7% in recognition of changes in enrollment. The reduction targets for the auxiliary and support units of 5.2 have been adjusted by $1.9 million in carry forward. This decision was made to soften the impact and set targets that President and I believe were achievable by these divisions. The overall reduction is 5%, and the range is 2.5 to 6%. All again based on an expectation that these are targets that can be managed over the next 12 months by careful financial management and determining on a monthly basis how these reduction targets will be met. We are pleased to tell you that for the first time and consistent with the budget model, we're creating a strategic incentive fund. I did it. Strategic Investment Fund. We debated the title, and I had trouble getting investment, but it is an investment, and that's what's important, consistent with, obviously, our strategic plan. These are funds that will be in seed money that may be funded for a year or two with the anticipation that permanent funding will be available within those areas. The first line is a target, not a final number from the provost, that indicates out of the CAPE process that 5 of approximately 15, I believe the number is, programs will be targeted for how can funds be invested for you to be able to grow your enrollment and enhance your program. These decisions are being made right now with an anticipation of the provost announcing these allocations by the beginning of the academic year. So we're thinking that this will operate on a 3-year cycle with 5 each year for the next 3 years. These were carefully selected initiatives that we believe will contribute to improve student recruitment and retention. The ITS, Information Technology Services Strategic Initiatives, for example, is working with the College of Education on a workflow pilot project, how to streamline processes within the college that will make them more efficient, and we're pleased to be a part of that initiative. Obviously, we're going to be kicking off a philanthropy campaign, and as the capital campaign unfolds, I'm sure you'll hear more about how the funds will be used to make us successful in that initiative. We've identified a pool of funds, still we determined how we'll use them, but we know we need to identify some funds for student recruiting, marketing, and enhancement. Now, the last one is still to be determined. We know that there are future opportunities and investments that we need to make, and the new EVP will work with the president and the provost to develop a process for identifying other items that ought to be funded in the next 12 months, and those will, in fact, be approved by the president before funds are allocated. So we're pleased to have in this budget what we think is very positive, $2.5 million targeted in areas that we think will be high impact. Capital budget. There isn't one. No, I'm sorry. Essentially, we say there isn't one because how many years in a row have we had to say that our number one capital project is the Gordon Ford College of Business and the Commonwealth of Kentucky still is not able to fund it? But we are pleased to move forward in this capital budget with a project that you have had a couple of presentations on called the WKU Commons, funded from the Aramark dining contract. The other two items in the capital budget are placeholders should we need them because we have legislative authorization for both capital renewal projects and any we need to do related to underground infrastructure. If we have an emergency, we have the authorization. But obviously, the heart of our capital will be investing into the WKU Commons over the next 12 months. And again, as the footnote states below, the 18-20 biennial budget included no state funds for capital projects. Looking to the future, obviously we're going to continue making progress on the new budget model and implementing resource allocation and management planning, helping the deans and division heads as necessary to fully realize the decentralized financial management and accountability that comes with it. We didn't achieve as much as we wanted to achieve on implementing the new budget model. Actually, we were in November before we had finalized the spreadsheets and had a full understanding of how the budget model was structured in the current year. So we were in November, and we were in the throes of developing a budget very quickly. We did implement the new governance structure. We did implement the new governance structure, which included an executive budget committee and an auxiliary and support allocation committee. But they really didn't have enough time to study what they needed to study. We had a lot of people that were looking at budget for the first time and didn't have a full understanding of the new budget model. So what you have for fiscal year 20 presented today is a little bit of a hybrid of how we've always done it and a little bit of moving forward with some of the important aspects that relate to the new budget model. The budget committees, both of them, obviously are faced with challenges, both in changes in enrollment and changes in state funding. This graph shows you the impact of changes in state funding since 99, adjusted for inflation or making it constant dollars in FY18. Another challenge. We don't have an answer today. I thought I would have an answer today, and I would give you a different script for pension reform. So you will follow in the news as I will, that one of our biggest challenges in the Commonwealth, if not the university, is in fact the KERS stability and our ability to actually buy our way out and fully fund our own funded liability. So this is still to be determined, and it is a significant variable in the budget as we have incorporated the data that we know and the only rate that's approved, which is that the KERS contribution rate is set for July 1 at 83%. This is fully funded in the budget. We actually went ahead and included it in the $19 million reduction that we implemented for fiscal year 19. 10-year enrollment change, we obviously are very concerned about turning the line back to a positive direction. So when you look to the future, you will hear student recruitment and retention over and over again, and I believe that at a meeting coming soon, you're going to see some very positive data that our retention data is improving pretty dramatically. But we're going to still have to do more on the entering class. All right, so that's my presentation for you today. May I answer any questions for the board?
What I wanted to do, Ann, if I could, President Maloney, do you want to make some comments before we get to any questions or other comments?
So just a brief comment, and it's related to the process in which we're engaged in thinking differently about budgets to the university. The budget model was not the resource allocation and management process. They're two separate things. The budget model is a tool. The way in which we're going to think about resources is changing, and that will happen over time. But the way to think about this is before you run, you have to walk, and before you walk, you have to crawl. And so we are somewhere between crawl and walk this year. Usually when you go through this kind of significant institutional change, it can take 3 to 5 years to get to a fully implemented process. We're making good progress. Nothing's ever fast enough for me, as Ann will tell you, but I think that the year and a half we've spent doing this has really transformed and will continue to change the way in which we think about scarce resources. More importantly, it will help us align those dollars with places where we're successful and where there are opportunities for growth. And so the whole reason we're doing this is to ensure that we are more nimble, we have the ability to shift resources where we're growing. And the flip side is true. In addition to being an incentive, there also is an alignment or a change in allocation for portions of the institution that might be shrinking. And so we can no longer afford to have a base budget for units that are shrinking that is just last year's plus some. It's not strategic. It doesn't allow the dollars to flow where success is occurring. And so I think this will help us as an institution invest where it is we need to invest and also disinvest in places where we might be shrinking. It's a complete 180 from a base budget plus model, which is what we've had for a long time. So this is significant organizational change. That comes with challenges, but it also comes with great opportunity as well. So I'm pleased with where we are.
Thank you, Chris. I noticed we had but there. Hi, Linda. Anyway, Linda's with us now. Before we open up for the questions, let me ask Ann one question. I think I know the answer to this, but I'd like to kind of address it briefly. In the event the changes are made at the General Assembly level, and we're entitled to get some consideration to buying out our position in the pension issue, how will we, what mechanically or procedurally will we do as a board and university to address that? I guess we actually come back and meet again.
I would anticipate that staff would analyze the bill, share that with the regents, and develop a timeline for decision making that would coincide with key deadline dates that are included in the bill. I would anticipate that it would require board approval. What you have is another debt instrument, and this board has always approved long-term debt.
Johnson, if I could add.
Yeah, please.
I've spent probably 2 to 3 as much time in Frankfurt this year than in my first year. focused on this issue. It's crucially important, not just for our employees, but for our bottom line. And the magnitude of increase that we're talking about is the equivalent of a 3% plus tuition increase, but we're not going to do KERS increases on the backs of our students and our families. We have to have movement from the legislature to solve this issue. What's likely to happen is one of three things. Nothing, which means we have an 84% increase. We have a rate freeze, but a pushing off of the dealing with the issue until next session. I think that's unlikely as well. Where we're most likely to wind up is some legislation that passes that within the legislation outlines a timeline by which we ask for an analysis of our obligation. We then bring that to the board along with a range of options. We consider all of those options during a six-month period, and then we have until the date I've heard is late in the spring once the next General Assembly session is finished. So that means we'll be dealing with this issue for another year at least. I wish we had resolution. We thought we did at the end of the regular session. There is some hope there will be a special session before the end of the summer to address this issue. And we're working hard. We continue to be in contact with our legislators, the executive branch, and leadership. But this is crucial not just for WKU, but for our sister institutions, and to be candid, for the entire Commonwealth.
KERS, I may add to that, is approximately $13.5 million. So, and that's out of a total retirement benefits budget of about $26 million.
About what?
Out of $26 million. So it's obviously very, very significant, and implementing approximately 70% increase in this budget. Is not sustainable. I think that's a very important variable that you'll consider is not just the 3%, but what could happen as future budgets are presented and that number would likely increase.
If I could add to that too, what we're hearing from KERS is that 83% likely would be north of 90% in the next year, so the growth continues. The other concern for higher education is that because of the liabilities in the pension system, that will create budget pressures on the overall Commonwealth budget, and not only are we being squeezed on the payment side for the benefit, there's also the notion that more state general fund dollars will have to go into the pension, which will reduce the amount available to allocate to other agencies, which means pay more here and a budget reduction over here in our appropriation.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
So if freezing the rate of 49% would be a $5 to $6 million increase to our budget.
Let's say that again.
Freezing the rate at 49% okay. Instead of 83 would add $5 to $6 million to that current budget.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. That hurts it either way.
That's just a question. Would you consider, and the accommodation in the coming fiscal year, I wrote this down because I didn't want to forget it, for the retirement liability increase funding by WKU, a common move by other Kentucky universities, it seems to me, based on what the knowledge that I've gained from this process, that the move to cover the lack of movement by the legislature is very commendable and it sets us apart. It doesn't seem like a common thing to plan for that, and it seems that you've done something that maybe others haven't. Is that the case?
I have not seen other comprehensive universities' budgets yet. What was unusual is that we addressed it in the first year in the biennium while we were addressing a $19 million reduction. That to fund it in the first year, which then and it does impact the carry forward that we'll have available. That was the unique part. While some universities might be considering whether they should fund it or not, or should pay it or not. That's a serious legal matter, and not one that we wanted to entertain.
Ed, okay, you want to say something?
Yeah, I have a number of items I want to bring up. The first one is sort of a really positive one. I'm very happy that the funding insurance rate increase. I have been a member of our insurance committee for quite a while, and I just wanted to state that the policy of that committee has been roughly to entertain a 70-30 cost split. And so what that means is if we look at the university contribution into which this increase is going, and in what the employees pay as a premium and as a out-of-pocket expense, we want to achieve roughly a 70-30 split, which we have been told is essentially what the competitive market would be. And unfortunately, since healthcare costs are going up, this requires every year that the university increases its contribution as well as the employees. Contribution. Starting next week, we will entertain projections for the next year and see where we will be. So that's a very positive thing. I'm happy that we do that. I have a couple other questions, and so the first one is, we have admitted that we will have a revenue loss due to reduction in tuition fees. And most likely, given the demographics of the state, this is going to be somewhat permanent. And for this money, we have a reduction target. But that reduction target only makes up for part of this. And the other part we cover with carry forward. And as Anne has just told us, we increase in carry forward for almost about 10 million. And that clearly is, to me, an unsustainable trajectory. And so I would really like for us as a board to maybe discuss this at our retreat and think about what is a long-term strategy, how to deal with this. We cannot conceivably do this another year in the same manner. I'm concerned that this carry forward, we don't know exactly where it's coming from. I'm not sure how it aligns with strategic goals. And so that to me is a one-time fix, which we cannot do again. In addition to this, and this is sort of buried in the budget book, way, way, way deep in there. Last year, you may remember that we had a 5+ million in terms of vacant positions that were supposed to be eliminated. That did not happen, and that's still in there in the budget, continually in there. And so this still needs to happen. My understanding is that we haven't quite worked out how to accomplish it, and from what I'm hearing from the academic side, this is a huge concern, because just put yourself in the position of unit leader. You have a reduction target, and what you would like to do is, if there's a vacant position, to at least use that towards this reduction target. But what you do not know is what happens with this 5.1 million. So you set this aside for the reduction target, and then do we come in and say, no, we need to net to cover the 5.1 million, so when and how is this going to be worked out?
Well, so what we have is a set of positions that are vacant now. They have been held vacant for the past year. The decision point was held until after the academic program review process was complete. Sure, you weren't sweeping vacant positions that were aligned with programs that needed to grow or be transformed. Given the transition of the provost position, we took some time, and our provost, Stevens, is looking at those. The goal is to have the positions that will be held centrally on the academic side and on the other, on the auxiliary support side, determined by mid-August. So as we go into the planning process for the year, we know which of those are or not available. But the resource allocation management process that we're talking about, we also know that there will be vacancies during the course of the coming year. And all of those will be available to leaders on campus to think about do I need to fill this? Do I need to fill both of these? Do I need to fill all these positions? Or can I apply them toward a reduction target? And so, I understand there are vacancies that are being held vacant that some folks might want to use for next year's reduction. The reality is that was last year, and we've got to make those decisions now in advance of starting the coming academic year. So I get that we want to move as quickly as possible. We also want to be as judicious as possible.
Yeah.
But absolutely, it was the first thing on my list with Susan when she showed up in my office earlier this week. So.
Do you have any thoughts of this 5.5 something million? Will that be distributed to the units according to some scheme, or do we know that yet?
So the first thing I want to see from the provost is what are the positions that, in consultation with deans and others, that are not affiliated with the firms that are going to grow, and what that number is. And then we'll go through the process.
I have one final comment I wanted to make. And this is on the budget book towards the end. I think it's page 65. You may remember that in the board we discussed the new freshman village, and we were talking about remaining affordable. And what you see on page 65 is our increases in the housing and dining rates and our increases in the meal plans. And if you look at the percentages, they're rather high. Mm-hmm. And I have concerns about that. Is that a sustainable rate increase? And how does that match with our change goal?
So on the housing portion of A65 and the housing rates, what we know is compared to our overlap institutions, we are remarkably affordable. We're creating a range of options from incredibly affordable to a little less affordable, but a little more luxurious accommodations for our students. We know there's a range of demands, but all of it focused on making sure compared to other institutions, we're still affordable. If you look at our net cost over time, which is tuition, fees, housing that the average student pays minus discount, we are still a remarkable bargain, thousands of dollars less than Louisville and Kentucky, and less than some other comprehensive universities as well. And so we're of the same mind on this, Region Arts, that we must, as we think about our student population and our service area, we must remain affordable. It's one of the reasons we're taking a complete look at our financial aid model to ensure that, in addition to merit aid to attract and continue to have an outstanding honors program, we also have the flexibility to discount for our neediest students and their families to help them be able to still afford a college degree. And so I appreciate you raising the point. It's an opportunity for us to rearticulate what our core values are, and that is, as a university that serves counties that sometimes are economically challenged, with 40% of our students the first in their families to go to college, we will remain a great value for those students and their families in the Commonwealth.
But the growth rates, as you see in there, will not allow us to do this for long.
Compared to our competitor institutions, it will still be a very good value. Again, there will be a range of opportunities available. And there are some students who have the resources that want to purchase the high end. And how do we create a range of options for our entire student population that satisfy all of those demands, both price, value, but also other things that people seek in housing options as students?
Thank you. Good. I'm good. Julie. Okay. George, do you have any questions or comments you'd like to address?
We asked him to unmute.
Oh,
I thought the presentation was good. I like the questions, and I know we've looked at this and dealt with this in the past, but given where we are and effort that we're going under that he's leading, I think we're in a good place. I'm very comfortable.
Linda?
No, I don't have any questions. I've been with you the whole time. I apologize for the technical problems.
Okay. We got you down. Thank you, Linda. If there are no other comments, questions, then hearing none, I will call for a vote on the motion. All in favor of the motion approving the operating budget, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Budget carries unanimously. Okay. I guess we are still, George, we're getting ready to get to you in a moment. Still don't have special recognition. One left, so that's that. I did want to make a comment. I'm going to try to make this comment. It's not directed to anyone except all of us as regents. And that is, this budget is a long, drawn-out, difficult process. It is a process that is engaged with shared governments, with the engagement of the Executive Budget Council. And the chart that everyone saw a few minutes ago during the course of the presentation, it will evolve. It will become more efficient. It will become more timely. At least I'm confident of that. I know you are, President Maloney. But the one thing I want to say that I think is important is that President Cavone is the spokesperson for both this board as well as for the university, especially in connection with matters involving budget, how it was developed, what questions may be addressed. So I would encourage everybody to take a look at our code of ethics as well as our bylaws, and if there are any questions for public comments from any of the regents, including especially myself, that they be directed back to President Cavone for the appropriate response, because that is the official response. George, next item is the nominating committee report, so I will turn it over to you, George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The nominating committee, which consists of Regent Porter, Regent Brinkley, and Regent Ball, and myself, had our discussions, and we, as a committee, were unanimous in the recommendations of submitting the year of board officers, the appointment of the treasurer, and recommendations for the chairpersons of the standing committee. For the nominating committee's recommendation of officers, we are recommending Regent Johnson as chair for 2019-20, Regent Hibden as vice chair, and Regent Brinkley as secretary. The treasury appointment will be Ms. Susan Barwith, effective for 2019-20. For the standing committees, we're recommending Regent Bale for Academic Affairs Committee, Regent McKinney for Finance and Budget, and Regent Henson for Student Affairs Committee.
And I'll let questions. Any questions that anybody got, George, or any member of the committee? Is this this is not an action item, is it not? Or it is an action item?
It is an action item.
George, you're chairman, so you get that.
Alright, so I would move we make have the motion to approve these recommendations for the report.
Second. I think it has to be a committee member.
Second. Thank you, Porter. For all those on the committee, vote in favor of the sign of aye. Aye. Those opposed? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Regent Nichols. I guess I've been instructed to discuss other business.
Right.
And just a reminder of upcoming calendar dates. August 1 is the retreat. Following day is the third quarterly meeting. It's August 2nd. September 16th and 17th will be the Governor's Symposium on Post-Secondary Education Trusteeship. I think that is in Louisville. Homecoming, October 19th. And then following that, October 25th, the committee meetings. The fourth quarterly meeting will be December 13th. And then December 14th is the college recognition ceremonies, which President Collier said, that's why we're all here. I hear no other items are on the special meeting agenda. So with that in mind, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Meeting adjourned. Thanks, George. Linda, thank you.